let you know before you try to go. Now this is my own show. Not a script or flip could make me stop, so just behave. I mean, there's no escape. Let's hope you make that drop, because you really don't want to take me off. And oh, what fun. I will tell you what to do and you will get it done. And oh, don't run. You'll find your nightmare here has only just begun. Welcome to my home.
Welcome to episode 51 of Horror for Dummies. I'm your host, Tim, and today is a different kind of episode. It's one that I told you about last week that we're going to be doing. Unfortunately, yes, Ben couldn't make it again. So what we're doing today is my What's Under the Bed feature review episode, where I'm going to give you reviews on different show, different movies that I've watched recently. So the movies that I'm doing this week are... One that just got released onto Netflix recently called My Teacher, My Obsession. The next one is Patient Zero. Then after that, we have The Night Eats the World. Oh, I forgot to mention Our House is another one that we're doing. Whoops. And then we've got Boar, the Australian, new Australian film that you might be interested in. Then after that, a movie called Hostile. And then a quick, tiny little itty-bitty review that I just threw in there of The Nun. So that's basically what we're doing this episode. On top of that, I'm coming in with the listener mail and the question of the week. And finally, yes, we're going to get to it. We're going to review the album that everyone has wanted to hear about. I'm guessing. No one's actually hit me up about it, but I assumed you want to know what Tim Capello is doing these days. So yes, we're going to do the Sexy Sax Man review tonight. But before we do anything, I should mention that this show is a proud member of the Padded Room Network. And we are one of those shows, along with Cake Wolf's Happy Hour and the Padded Room podcast. And you should give each of us a go. Not just us, the Padded Room Network and Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. Alright, well, let's get down to it. It's been fucking weeks since we opened up this mailbag, this huge, dirty slut of a mailbag. So let's get to it with listener mail.
Listener mail.
Alright, listener mail. We have emails and we have even an audio clip to play for you that, strangely enough, is amusing and made me piss myself. But the first one that comes in is the man, the myth, the legend. I'll try my best impersonation of Ben right now. Alan! Alan Cha-Cha! I can't do it. I'm not the man to do it. Anyway, he comes in. This is back from weeks ago, so bear with us, guys. Finally, the Cha-Cha has come back to Horror for Dummies. I see that Alan's gotten back into wrestling hard. I'm proud of you, Alan. So, Mr. Ben, what did you think of part 6? It doesn't matter what you think, unless you liked it. I kid. To me, this movie is what Jason is. My Jason is an undead beast, not some yokel in a mask. I always thought Jason was undead anyway. Honestly, I went with he drowned in Crystal Lake and came back. I never thought he was human. I think maybe his mum's death is what brought him back. If he was dead, it makes the movie make more sense. That explains how he could absorb so much damage and keep coming back. I'm probably wrong, but that's my theory and I'm sticking to it. I rather enjoyed Crossfaith. Nice. Hope you're doing well. If you're some man, what the Cha is cooking. And then he writes at the end, it's pizza, y'all can have some. I want pizza. I want Alan's pizza. Thank you, Alan, for your first of many emails. I actually agree with Alan's theory on Jason Voorhees being always been dead. That's basically the exact way I've been looking at it too. I don't see how Jason could live in the woods. I mean, I'm sure he can, but I kind of find that a bit silly. The next little emailer comes in from our friend at Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. He is Cake Wolf himself. He has questions for the show. If you had to make a horror movie based on a killer animal that hasn't been done yet, what would the animal be? Also, what would the movie be like? Straight up horror or spoof? Jesus Christ, Cake Wolf, this is a hard one. A killer animal movie that hasn't been done yet. That's the hard part, because everything's been done. I mean, you obviously have shark movies. You have bear movies, grizzly bear movies, or black bear with backcountry. You have lion attack movies with Prey and the Ghost in the Darkness. I'm sure there's a movie about a tiger out there. You got wolves with the grey. And then all types of bug and insect movies. I can't think of any. You've even got a movie on bats. You got rats. Fuck, every time I think of something, I realize then it's got a movie about it. Dude, this one's a bit hard, man. I don't know if I can answer this properly. Give me a week, okay? Give me a week to think about this, and I'll get back to you. All right? Okay. He continues. Also, oh, by the way, I'd make it a straight-up horror if it was an animal, depending on the animal. You know what? A beaver. Fucking zombievers. Never mind. I'll get back to you next week, Geckwolf. Also, if you guys had one day to live and could do anything you wanted without repercussions, what would you do? I don't know if I should share this right now, because mine would involve the rusty machete in some guy's head. Just putting it out there. Yeah, there'd be a lot of things I would steal. I'd probably rob a bank. What would be one of things. But yeah, there are people in this world that need to be deleted, if you know what I'm saying. Anyway, Alan comes in back again. This is coming back another once again from a few weeks ago. He writes, Lord Tim, Lady Jill, and Lord Ben. Sorry for the loss in the Horror for Dummy family. Hope you all are doing okay. Thank you, Alan. That was Joyce's auntie who passed away. It's fine. She's fine. She was old, and it's all right. Thank you, though. He continues, really digging the music show. I death growled baby one more time on the way to work. Nice. Love Kiss. That's my boy. God of Thunder is one of my favorite of their songs. If you haven't seen it, check out Kiss Meets Scooby-Doo. It's a lot of fun. Y'all could totally be Kiss for Halloween. I see Tim as Demon, Jill as Starchild, Abby as the Cat, and Jay as Space Ace. It would be epic. Thank you for the birthday song. It touched me in my naughty bits. Well, love y'all, Baron Cha-Cha Von Doom. That's a motherfucking cool name right there. Kiss, going as Kiss for Halloween would be epic. The only problem is I have a beard, and I'm not willing to shave off that beard, and I don't like to half-ass costumes. So I feel like, look, I'm a bald guy, I have no hair, and I have a beard, and I'm slightly overweight. So there's only one creature in this world, not creature, one character in this world that I can go as for Halloween, and that is Captain Spaulding. So I'm thinking that Jay's going to be Otis, and Jaleesa can be baby. Or maybe Abby can be baby. Jaleesa can be some naked slut that I fucked. I like that. Thank you. Thank you, Alan, for your awesome little message again. Alan comes in again. So a year has come and gone. Wow. This really had nothing to do with horror, but I know y'all both like wrestling. I have just recently gotten back into it. Yeah. Are y'all excited for Hell in a Cell? What about Taker and Triple H's final match? Finally, the Iconics. I know they are from Australia, but those accents, man. Are those put on, or do people sound like that down there? They are so annoying. Thank you for calling my country annoying, Alan. No. Okay. Welcome back to the world of wrestling. You're gonna basically be like me, lose your hair, gain weight, and be pissed off all the time, because that's exactly what WWE is doing to me right now. Hell in a Cell was this week. I have finished watching it, and I've got to say, man, it was actually a really, really good pay-per-view. The first match, Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton in Hell in a Cell, brilliant. Loved it. Actually, pretty decent pay-per-view, which is funny because I wasn't excited. That's the answer to your question. I felt a lot of the matches were boring and repeats of stuff we've already seen. So, yeah. Taker and Triple H's final match. So, for those people who don't know or who aren't in wrestling, the WWE, originally called the WWF. You would know them for bringing stars to light, such as Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold, and The Rock, among various others, are coming down under, down our way, and to do like a big super showdown, which is what they're calling it, the super showdown. And the main event of that match will be Triple H and The Undertaker for the final time. The end of an era. Look, that's the only match. Oh, but this has been done in Melbourne. I live in New South Wales, so that's a plane trip away. And I'm not willing to pay the money to go to this show because other than Triple H and Undertaker, all other matches are boring as fuck. This is such a boring... boring is the only word I can come up with right now. Boring card that I'm not going to pay plane flights and accommodation and then tickets just to see some boring fight nothing will happen. As for Triple H and Taker, this won't be the last time they fight. I bet you they'll come again. Wouldn't surprise me. And finally, the Iconics. Yes, they are from Australia and they're from Melbourne, I must add. And here's the thing about their accents. No, those accents are put on to the shithouse. And the reason I know this is because I can tell, I can hear the Australianness coming out of them. If I can hear it, then you're putting it on too much. And yeah, it's really annoying. And I'm not really big into that group of people. They're quite annoying. Yeah. So thank you, Alan. Once again, Cake Wolf comes in again. He writes, "Why is Tim so much cooler than Paley?" Because I show up every week, unlike Paley. Oh, shots fired. "How did Ben get so powerful?" He didn't. He was never powerful. "When did Jaleesa escape the kingdom of hotness and defeat the evil witch that held Tim captive in hell?" Cake Wolf, I've got nothing. I've got no answer to that. That was good, though. "How is it that Sir Alan Cha-Cha can grant wishes and defy time and space?" Well, the thing about Alan Cha-Cha is he's a wizard. He's a wizard, Harry. Is Tim actually Brad Pitt in disguise? No, don't be silly. I'm much cuter. At least I'm glad he said Brad Pitt, not Tom Cruise. That's another way. All right, Alan comes in one more time. This is the last time Alan comes in. He writes, "My dude or dudes, way to go, Ben, on the promotion at work. Tim, the solo show was awesome." Oh, thanks, dude. "If Ben isn't around to do the shows anymore or as much, keep it up. You have a good personality and can carry a show on your lonesome. Thanks, man. It means a lot. It really does. As far as a random science teacher picking up weapons and going ham," which he messaged me saying that stands for hard as a motherfucker, "with them, if she had any previous experience with weapons, even as a hobby, such as target shooting or hunting, she would probably be able to use them no problem. If that weapon was full auto, she would have a bit more of a challenge, as going full auto really screws with your accuracy. It causes the muzzle to rise if she just had no experience, but other than watching other people use them. Yeah, she could still pick them up and try, but would probably end up with a skull on the predator's wall." Yes, thank you. That's exactly my point. "Oh yeah, what is it that you yell at the end of the show? Cha-Cha World Order out." Well, finally someone asks me about what I yell at the end of the show. I can't believe it's taken everyone this long. So, okay, alright, here we go. We talked about wrestling just a second ago, and basically what I yell when I just go, "Dep!" to end the episode is kind of a tribute to a wrestler called Bray Wyatt, who's kind of in WWE at the moment. I don't actually know where he is. But yeah, so it's kind of just a funny thing for myself. Because when he appears, he will just appear and it's a noise that will come over the sound and it'll just go, it'll make some weird noise that to me it sounds like, "Dip!" And then the lights will come back on and he'll appear. So I thought it would be funny for me to do that And it also just helps me in the editing room to know when to cut and all that stuff. So yeah, it's just a fun little thing that I like to do to close out the episode. I like it. So leave me alone. All right, the last one that I've got to to play for you. This is an audio clip. This comes in from Matthew Fishgold, aka Wolf, Cake Wolf. And this is a nice little clip he sent us. Now, I hope you enjoy it. It goes for 2 minutes, but I highly enjoy this. So I hope you guys do too.
Hey, Tim, just chiming in with a little bit of an anatomy lesson for you. Figure you could be using it to your advantage in some which way, shape, or form. So this anatomy lesson comes to you in song. There's a butthole in your butthole. In that butthole, there's a butt.
Oh, fuck. Sorry, guys, I fucked up.
Hey, Tim.
Give me a second.
There's a butthole in your butthole. In that butthole, there's a butthole. And in that butthole's other butthole, there's a butthole in that butthole.
In that butthole, there's a butthole. In that butthole's buttholes, I don't even know.
There's another butthole in those buttholes. And in that other butthole, there's another butthole. In that butthole, there's a butthole. And in that butthole, there's a butthole. In those buttholes, there's more buttholes. And in those buttholes, there's more buttholes. In that butthole, there's a butthole.
There's a butthole in that butthole. There's a butthole in that butthole, and another butthole in that butthole.
And another butthole in that butthole. In that butthole, there's a butthole. And in that last butthole, there's another butthole. In the butthole, there's a butthole. In a butthole, there's a butthole. There's a butthole in a butthole. And in your butthole, there's my butthole. And in my butthole, there's your butthole. And in Christina's butthole, there's another butthole that belongs to Darian's butthole. Has a butthole in his butthole. There's my butthole. And in my butthole, there's a butthole. There's another butthole in that butthole. And in Ben's butthole, Jaleesa's butthole is in that butthole. In your butthole, in that butthole, there's another butthole. It's about 2 minutes.
That's too many buttholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought Nelly's butthole was going to be in someone's butthole specifically. Mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your buttholes, Nelly's butthole, and in her butthole, there's a butthole. In that butthole's another butthole.
That's the gaping hole is just a butthole inside another butthole.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if you play this on your show, man.
There you have it. Cake Wolf himself. I swear he just sends me this shit, and it's usually at 2 a.m. in the morning I'll receive shit like this from Cake Wolf. He'll just send me this shit to see if I play it on the show. Of course I'm going to play it on the show, Cake Wolf. I think it's funny. And the funny thing is that I got this a few weeks ago. Shows how long we haven't done listener mail for. And when I got it, that was the same day that me and Ben and our wives were going to a horror movie stage play. That we went to, and I got a bit drunk, because Ben's a big drinker, and I struggle to keep up with him at times, so I got a bit drunk. Ben was fine, but I kept singing that the whole time, walking to this theatre, and yeah. Also, I got a note, I gotta say right now, Christina, you are one hell of a woman, for sticking around with Cake Wolf and doing the shit that he asks. Cake Wolf, you need to marry Christina. Because she does, like, she's clearly perfect for you, I must say. All right, so that is it for listener mail. Now let's get to a thing we haven't done for even longer, which is Ben's question of the week.
Ben's question of the week.
All right, we're back with Ben's question of the week. I must note that I asked this question on the 18th of August. It is now, as I record, the 18th of September. So that shows you how long it's been. But we're back with it, and I hope you enjoy. So the question of the week was, what's your least favourite Friday the 13th? Alan comes in with 5 or 7. Sean Blinky Sullivan comes in with probably 7. It's pretty weak. Randy Blanford says, Part 9, Jason Goes to Hell. The flick opened with an interesting idea. The government, specifically the army, knows about Jason and attempts to kill. But from there, it just goes to complete shit. Watch it and find out. Or better yet, save yourselves 90 minutes and skip. Randy, I'm probably going to agree with you there. I think Jason Goes to Hell was my least favourite, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I watched that movie, so yeah. Scott Dent comes in and says, 2012 had a pretty good one. Think it was in April. Don't know. Memory's fuzzy. I see what you did there, Scott. Geordie Van Vuquis, Jason Takes Manhattan. Oh. Blinky's not going to be happy with you. Ginger Jones, our good friend Ginger, comes in with saying, I really can't comment as I haven't seen them all. Oh, what? I know. Don't judge. I will get there eventually. That's cool. Everyone has those horror movies that they haven't seen going around to yet. I have them. What haven't I seen that's kind of big? There's a lot of giallos that I have yet to catch up on. So, yeah. Cakewolf, again, comes in saying, probably the original, but I love them all for different reasons. Actually, you know what? I'm going to be controversial here and say the original is my least favorite. Yeah. There, I said it. He comes in again, Cakewolf. X is probably my favorite. All right, well, we don't agree on the same things, because X is definitely not my favorite. But hey, to each their own. So that was it for Ben's question of the week. Now, let me ask you a question for next time. And this is one that I've been excited to ask, because a lot of people are so up in their high horses about this subject. Horror remakes. Are you a fan? Are you not? I want to know, what is your favorite horror remake? I'm going to say right now, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is my favorite horror remake. I fucking love that. Almost, probably on par as the original. That's how much I love that movie. So get us your answers on the Facebook page if you can, and we'll get to next week. But from now, let's jump into our first review of the new Netflix film, My Teacher, My Obsession.
I needed to get my life back on track, Riley. For that, I needed a fresh start.
Mr. Sumner, new English teacher.
I want to be someone you can talk to about anything.
You waiting on Dad? Or should I say Mr. Sumner?
Making friends?
I'm Kyla, by the way.
I'm Riley.
I'm a fan.
Tat, that was just the first day. The boys here are just boys. If I'm going to be in a relationship with someone, I want it to be someone who's mature enough to handle it.
Good luck finding that in high school.
I know what I want.
So it seems.
Well, is there a Mrs. Sumner?
There was.
I was so broken when your mom left. I've been so empty.
Not the first time I've seen a naked man. Being a husband, parent, teacher. When do you get to just be a man? You used me. You seduced my dad. My dad promised me he'll stay away from you for good. You are not taking him away from me.
Look at me. This is it, Kyla. We're done. For good.
There's only room for one woman in his life. And it's gonna be me.
My Teacher, My Obsession from 2018. So the plot is, Riley struggles to meet friends after transferring to a new high school where her father is an English teacher. When she meets Kyla, a fellow loner, they become close friends until Riley learns that Kyla is obsessed with her father. So I was searching around on Netflix the other day, just trying to find something quick and easy to watch while I feed my son. And at the start screen, there was a movie called My Teacher, My Obsession. And you know Netflix usually just starts the trailers without your permission and just goes from there. The same thing happened to me in this circumstance. And The title, My Teacher, My Obsession, I thought was really a strange, weird little title. I don't know why you'd call your movie that. And I just wrote it off straight away. Not into it. But then the trailer kept going, and it kept me more intrigued, so I had to click play. So I clicked play, and from about the 5-minute mark, I knew exactly what I've got myself into. Basically, as my first thoughts were, this is a Lifetime Channel movie. But I kept watching because something was pulling me in, and something kept me there for the entire duration of this movie. As I continued watching the film, I noticed the acting. It's not the best acting, but at the same time, it's not horrible. I've seen worse films out there. But the acting is this type of acting that usually pulls me out of a film. But once again, something kept pulling me in and kept me there. And the story, it was the story. I needed to know what was going to happen. Even this isn't a well-made film in any sense of the word, but I still sat there and took it all in. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of had fun. I'm not going to lie. Maybe it was the cast of girls in this film that helped me stay there. I mean, you have some gorgeous, stunning-looking girls in this film. So that really did help a bit. Once it was all said and done, I found myself actually enjoying my time with it. Yes, it is rough around the edges, and it does act like a TV movie a lot of the time. The ending left a lot to be desired, I will say that. I was really displeased with the ending, and I kind of wish they went with a different route on it. But overall, I still had a good time with this. I found the characters to be likable. I found the people, the villains, the people you meant to hate, I hated them. I really didn't want them to succeed in what they were doing and all that stuff. The story as a whole really interests me, and it kept me off my phone for the entire run of this film, which, quite honestly, is a rare thing to do. I have a problem with my phone. Now, obviously, this is not a film I'm going to give a perfect score to, because it does have many problems in it, as I said before. But my own personal review, I actually enjoyed my time with this. But would I recommend this to anyone? The answer is probably no. I'd say watch the trailer first and make up your mind from there. I will mention that this isn't really a horror film. It does have a horror feel to it, especially closer to the end. But for the most part, it's a drama thriller film. So if you're more into those and you're willing to give horror a rest for a second, maybe this is up your alley. Basically, if you're into films such as Fatal Attraction from 1987 or Fear from 1996, I think you'll enjoy this. Now, I'm not saying that this is in the same ballpark as those two films, but they do have their similarities. Overall, I'm giving this film a 6 out of 10. Yes, it has its problems. Yes, its acting is bad. Yes, the story doesn't wrap up as much as I would like to, but this kept me there. Kept me intrigued for the entire duration, and I found myself having fun with it. So that's our review of My Teacher, My Obsession, which you can catch now on Netflix. The next review that we're doing is a movie called Our House. So let's check out that trailer.
Let's do this.
Imagine a world where your phone never dies or appliances come without plugs. We have wireless internet, so why not wireless electricity?
Should something be happening?
Just give it a second.
Hello?
You gotta come home. There was an accident. A truck crashed right in front of Mom and Dad.
You guys holding up okay?
It's been rough, but I think we're hanging in there.
Does it work?
I think it does work. Just not on light bulbs.
Last night, I think I saw Mom and Dad. You can't live in that house and tell me you don't feel them.
So sure you're interacting with your parents.
Why don't they talk to me?
You're not ready yet.
doing this.
So, Our House, released in 2018, released at the end of July. Now, the story is, let's talk about the plot. The plot is, a young man and a few friends invent a machine that could possibly change the technological world for the better. Wireless electricity. Much like Wi-Fi, but for your light bulbs, TV, etc, etc. But this, with this invention comes a lot of energy. Energy that could be summoning the other side. Now, when this guy finds out that his parents have been involved in an accident, he needs to move back home to take care of his younger siblings. But finds out his new project may be reaching out to his parents, and spooky stuff entails. So, I'll start off by saying that the first hour of this film is pretty slow-paced, and it's not really until the last half hour where the horror really comes into play. The first hour, while interesting, did have me looking at my phone a couple of times. Now, that's not to say that this film is bad at all. The story tries to be different, which is good. We've never seen anything like this before, and it's really great to see a fresh take on the ghost-slash-paranormal subgenre. The film employs all the normal cheesy methods to heighten tension, induce suspense, and produce those jump moments. You know, the slow, throbbing sound followed by a loud, sharp bust of a flat note from a stringed instrument. It's all textbook spooky stuff, really. The effects of the ghosts, while for the most part pretty decent, but you can tell at times that they really amped up the CGI on the look of the ghost. Overall, it's a pretty slow burner with low-key paranormal stuff in the periphery that ramps up a little towards the end. The story's okay, but not enough to really pique your interest. Most other aspects of the film are on similar standing, and even though the performance of the cast are very strong, there isn't enough going on here to give it more than an average rating. To me, this is a 5 out of 10, which is an average film. You can do a lot worse, but this is a film to check out, only if you're a really huge paranormal film fan. Other than that, I don't feel you need to rush out and see it. So that's our review of Our House. The next film that I want to cover is a film that's come out just recently entitled Patient Zero. So let's have a look at this trailer, and we'll be back with our feature review.
New super strain of rabies.
Spreading faster than can be contained. Create a super violent
release. Search for patient zero.
Society is near collapse.
Time is of the essence.
Bring him in.
There is no treatment. There is no cure. It turns humans into violent predators. Communication is impossible. Except for me.
Ready?
Yeah. Got a name? I can speak their language. Why? I've been bitten. But not turned. We are hidden underground in a nuclear silo. We search desperately for patient zero.
We cannot reverse engineer a vaccine without patient zero. The music's not affecting him at all.
Nothing.
Tick-tock. You assume we're all the same.
Something new and smart is evolving.
You know anything about patient zero? Tick-tock. It's only a matter of time. Tick-tock.
Trust me, young man. Time is a luxury you cannot afford.
We've been breached.
Do I look sick to you? I don't think that we're the disease. We're the cure to get rid of the human infection.
We will continue to fight.
Time is of the essence.
Because that is what we do.
I suggest you ask yourself.
Oh my god.
Who's winning?
What can you see?
No.
Patient Zero from 2018. Let's get into the plot. A small pocket of humanity hides deep inside an underground bunker while the Rage virus runs rampant on the surface. But just like in Day of the Dead, there is a group of soldiers and scientists who study some of the infected to see if they can't find a cure. One of the soldiers is able to communicate with the Raven infected, while both of the scientists, who are played by actors who are clearly on hiatus from Game of Thrones, help. Normally, the infected are wildly feral, but then Stanley Tucci, shows up as a college professor who's both crazily violent and is also annoyingly talkative. Is he the patient zero that our weird hero is seeking for? Maybe. All that matters is that the infected are on their way, and they might not be as mindless as previously believed. Once again, this is something new that has been brought to the horror genre. Alright. Now, all I tend to hear nowadays is how people are over the zombie subgenre, and I don't really get it. I mean, yes, it's been done to death countless times, and we've seen pretty much every form of zombie and infected film that the genre has to offer us, or we think we have. And then something new pops up, and it can reinvent people's love for the zombies, or it's just not executed properly, and that will leave an even bigger bad taste on people. Take, for example, Train to Busan. That's a title that brought back zombies after they were going stale. But since then, we've really had nothing come out that blew us away. I mean, what have we had? We've had a fuckload of post-apocalyptic zombie films, like Cargo, The Cured, that French-Canadian film Ravenous, Here Alone, they're just to name a few. And while, yeah, they're decent, I'm over the slow-paced zombie films, and they seem to be taking over. I want my zombie action. I want the fast sprinting zombies, or even the slow zombies. I want the blood and the gore. I want the flesh ripping apart. The last one that I can remember, besides Train to Busan, was the Dawn of the Dead remake. And yes, I'm aware that we have some good zombie films since then, but any great ones, besides the ones that are comedy horror, I can't think of any. But let's talk about Patient Zero. And with an intro like that, you would think this is where I was going to tell you that we finally have an action-packed zombie film that is going to blow your mind. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but that's not what we got here. This movie, it's interesting for the most part. There are odd little moments and character beats that feel like remnants from a much longer movie. There's next to nothing in world-building or character development. And the whole third act is a confusing series of chases and attacks that are fun in the moment, but don't add up all that much. Fans of the three lead actors or anything related to zombie-adjacent cinema could maybe give Patient Zero a spin once it hits Netflix, but despite a few fun moments here and there, Patient Zero feels like someone tried to make their own unofficial 28 Days Later sequel, but kind of screwed up somewhere along the line and salvaged what they could. It's kind of a mess, but at least it's not boring. I'll give it that much. So I'm going to come with this with a 5 out of 10. Nothing really memorable and very average in my opinion. If I could be perfectly honest right now, I watched this a fair few weeks ago, and I'm struggling to even remember what happened for the most part. I wrote this a few weeks ago, so I'm really struggling to actually recall what happened. I do remember the ending, and my first thoughts coming out of this when the credits start rolling is this would be a perfect pilot of a TV series. It just left me not wanting more, but in a way wanting more. I wanted to know what was going to happen, because it doesn't really wrap it up as much as I would like it to. And yes, I know that films don't exactly need to be wrapped up with a little bow, but I kind of wanted this one to do that, and it just didn't do it for me. It's not a horrible film. It's just not one that I'm going to revisit. I don't feel that I need to. I've seen it once, and I'm glad I saw it. But yeah, I think unless you are heavily into the zombie genre, that you could probably skip this. But yeah, so that's been my little review on Patient Zero. But why don't we stay with zombies for a quick second? Because I've got another movie to talk about that's in the realm of the zombie subgenre, and that title is The Night Eats the World. Which, before we go to the trailer, I must admit, I fucking love that title. The Night Eats the World. I think it's brilliant. Brilliant. But before we do get to that review, let's take a look at the trailer of The Night Eats the World.
You made it through everything. You probably thought you'd drop dead peacefully in your sleep. And then this happens.
Is anyone here? Hey!
Do you think there's a cure?
So, The Night Eats the World. This is a film that comes from France. But, fear not, this is not a subtitled film. This is spoken in English, so you won't need those subtitles if you're not a fan of them. This was released... So it says on the internet, the interwebs, that it was released early this year, but I only found out about this film probably about 2 months ago. I know there's a lot of other people who have reviewed this film as well. So you've probably heard about it from now. But if you haven't, let's take you through the plot. So, the film follows Sam, who, in an effort to retrieve some of his belongings, arrives at his ex-girlfriend's apartment, just as she's throwing a huge party. She sends Sam to a quiet room and tells him to wait there for her so they can have a chat. And Sam falls asleep, because that's what you do at a big party. Anyway, only to awake the next day and find Paris overrun with the living dead. He goes into survival mode, ultimately deciding to hunker down at the now silent party house and make do for as long as he can. From there, the film captures Sam's decline from an optimistic survivor making the best of a terrible situation to a fearful little child. Oh, so this is another new look into the zombie subgenre. But for me, this one is a rank higher than the previous film, but it's still not without its problems. Now, firstly, I will say that straight off the bat, I found this film to be slow. Very slow at times. In fact, I'm not going to lie, I fell asleep the first time around. Which is funny, me saying that, because in the end, I didn't hate this film. And in fact, the trailer had me dying to check this out. I'm a huge zombie fan, so any new zombie film will hold my attention. This one had something different about it, though. Now, me falling asleep wasn't anything about the film. I was just tired, so don't let that fear you. This one had something different. It was a different premise. It was a different story. Something we haven't really... From the trailer, something we haven't really seen before. Now, I said it was slow, but that doesn't mean it's a bad film. I will admit there were some scenes that I did find boring at times, but the production of this film is where it really excels. The look and performance of the zombies is awesome. Now, when I mentioned I needed my zombie action in the last review, this is the type of zombie action I was after. The fast-paced running zombies, the blood-curdling zombies. But the action, unfortunately, is few and far between. Now look, the acting is great, the cinematography is on par with the rest, but once again, my main problem is the slow pace this film had to it. Now, to recommend this film to anyone would be a hard thing to do unless you're really big into the zombie films, and I could still see a few people calling it boring. But if you're into slow burns, then maybe you should check this one out. Now, I'm going to give this one a 7 out of 10, and that's mainly because of the great job the makers did to create the film. And, of course, I fucking love the title. So should you go check it out? I feel it's one that everyone should give a one over. Make their own mind up. So that is our review of The Night Eats the World. Alright, the fourth film that we're doing on this episode is... we're getting out of the zombie subgenre. We're done with zombies for this episode. We're going to my country, Australia. And we're going to check a movie that's just been released, probably about a month ago. A movie that I've been following the production for ages. This one is entitled Boar. So let's kick it off with the trailer, and we'll be back with our review on Boar.
Okay, cabin fever is officially set in. I suggest the next town we come to, we pull over and get some grub.
Good idea.
Sounds great.
Tearing the fences down there at the old Patterson's farm there.
He's down a few sheep too. Huh? Something's killed him, yeah.
Well, what, all nine of them?
There's nothing out there except dust and ruse.
That's a load of shit, Ernie, and you know it. You remember that smash up on the highway coming into town, right, about 12 months ago? They couldn't find the couple. All the police found was the wrecked car. I was driving back from Bob's place in me truck, and I saw something in the paddock, about 300 or 400 metres off, and I hit the spotty on it. It was a boar.
We're talking about the recently released Australian film, Boar. So what the story is about is, Boar follows the story of the Munro family, who are in the outback Australia, visiting family. Once they get there, they encounter a beast of staggering size that's hungry for blood. And that's basically your story. Pretty simple premise, but did the movie work? Was it effective? Well, this movie obviously is about a wild boar. Now, I'm sure there are people out there who have no idea what a boar is, but basically it's a huge pig. Now, coming from Australia, you're probably asking if we have them out here. Now, you know Australia's known for kangaroos and koalas and emus and shit, but you never really hear of Australia known for its pig population or its boar population. So, if you are curious to know if there are boars out here, the answer is yes. You're probably asking if I've seen one out in the wild. And the answer is no. In fact, I haven't even seen one of these at the zoo. That's saying too much. Yes, they're in Australia, and yes, they get big. But I have not seen one, no. I've been told stories about them, and I've been in the outback hunting with family friends. And while I saw no boars, I shot a lot of rabbits and kangaroos. I didn't see any boars, luckily. According to the regular hunters out there who hunt them all year round, who hunt kangaroos or anything all year round, boars are not animals to fuck with. One gentleman even told me his hunting dog had its head ripped off by a wild boar and was then chased up a tree. Now, when he told me this, I was probably about 12, 13, 14. Now, whether he was lying to scare me or whether he was telling the truth is something I'll never know, but he said he was sincere. Either way, I've seen pictures of wild boar attacks, I've heard stories, and I know that they're not animals to fuck with. So let's get to the movie boar. And I'll tell you straight up, boars cannot get as big as it was portrayed in the film. They're not anywhere near that size. But that didn't take me out of the movie. Now, first thing I have to mention is the cast in this film is quite impressive. We have John Jarrett, who, of course, you all know as Mick Taylor. And funny enough, he plays exactly the same character from Wolf Creek, but only nicer. And I will say he had me laughing a few times in this film. Then we have Nathan Jones, who, if some of you people do know, a little movie called Charlie's Farm. He was Charlie, the killer in that movie. He's a big, big boy. 6'8", I believe he stands. For you wrestling fans, you may remember Nathan Jones had a quick stint in the WWE and even went to team with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Well, he almost went to team with The Undertaker, and then backstage brawl happened and he wasn't allowed to be in the match. And yeah, he was in WWE for a quick little bit and then apparently got fired. I don't really know why. But another big name in this movie was Bill Moseley. Now, of course, everyone, if you like your horror movies, you'll know the name Bill Moseley, most notably for the character of Otis from Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses. In this, it's funny because I know him as Otis and I know him as Chop Top and all this crazy stuff. In this movie, he's the complete opposite of those characters. He's a very down-to-earth American man living in Australia. And I found his character quite interesting because I just haven't seen that side of Bill Moseley before. So, yeah. And his little story in the movie is very interesting and somewhat shocking with his outcome. So, Boar is a fun film. I'm going to say that straight up, through and through. I had fun with this. It made me laugh a few times, and the gore is over the top and plentiful. There's a lot of it. The thing is, I'm usually very critical on Australian films, because to be honest, I think a lot of them are quite shit, and I'm not really a fan of Ozploitation films, which is funny because you'd think I'd be back in my own country, but no. There's only a handful I find interesting. And as you all probably remember, I wasn't the biggest fan of Wolf Creek. The first one, anyway. But Boar, this is a good one to watch at a party. Now, it does have its problems, and the main one being the effects. A lot of CGI. Bad CGI. Almost in the same realm as Sharknado. Yeah. Which, at times, it kind of took me out of the film. But then it's brought back with some practical effects, which are not on the same level as The Thing or American Werewolf in London, but they look a hell of a lot better than CGI, I'll tell you that much. Now, this isn't one to watch with the kids. Over-the-top swearing and gore will damage a child's mind. And the overuse of Australian slang may confuse some listeners. I had Darian from the Padded Room podcast message me with a question about Australian slang before. He wanted to know what don't root abos meant, because he was watching a movie called Rogue Games, and that was apparently printed on the bathroom stall. For you other American listeners out there who's wondering what don't root abos mean, it basically means do not have sex with Aboriginal people. Root is to fuck, and abo is just a short abbreviation for Aboriginals. Aboriginal people are very different over here. They're usually the bums of society in Australia. And I'm going to get a bit controversial here. They're not the most attractive people in Australia. But that's neither here nor there. I'm going to get in trouble for that. But if you're having trouble with the slang, of course, you can just ask me and I'll let you know what they're talking about. Overall, I'd give Boar a 7 out of 10. It's a fun film, and it deserves at least one watch. I'd probably give this another watch. I probably would, but I don't feel I'll be talking about it at the end of this year, either in my best of or worst of. I just don't feel it's that type of movie. But it's still a fun movie. If you are having, say, an Australian party, I don't know why you would, but if you are, this would be a good film to put in the background. It's got everything there that classifies us as a country, I guess you can say. But yeah, I say it's worth a watch, but nothing to jump on and race out and grab straight away. We'll get to a movie that's one of those movies now. Why not? So let's jump into our last review. My last review is the film Hostile. So let's kick it off with the trailer for Hostile.
As far as I remember, I always wished for the end of the world. My name is Juliet, and I survived the apocalypse. You think I'm lucky? You're wrong. All that's left now are memories. But sometimes, memories can save your life. Because every mistake you make it for a reason. The only thing I learned is life's a bitch. You think you've hit the ground. You've just started to fall. And in the end, you only have one choice. Rise. Or die.
The movie is entitled Hostile. And don't get that mixed up with Hostel, the Eli Roth movie, or another movie called Hostiles, with an S at the end. This is just Hostile. Now, this is still yet to be released as of right now, this recording. It's the 12th of September right now. But as you are listening to this, it's probably released. I've got the release dates right now in the USA. It's the 13th of September. I'm just having a look to see what it's got. In France, it's the 26th of September, and it doesn't say anything about Australia, of course. It doesn't say anything about England either, funny enough. But I'm going to just guess that it's going to be around late September that this will be released. Alright, so, Hostile, from in the future. So the story is, sometime in the near future, and following a deadly apocalypse, a woman roams the desolate countryside in a beat-up old van, searching for supplies and fuel. Back on the road, she flips several times and is left unconscious. When she awakes, sometime later, she has a compound fracture on one of her legs. Her gun is out of reach, and it is dark. And then come the noises from outside, sounding like a creature. As she struggles to get through the pain and to find escape, she flashes back to her life prior to the apocalypse, her addiction, her lover, and the beginning of the end. So that's basically the premise for you, but this movie dives a bit deeper into her previous life. So, I'm going to say right at the start that I found out about this movie from another review from a Mr. Mark Nato from the Horrorcast. He gave this a great review, given a 9.5 out of 10. And I went into this because the cover art is awesome. It looks like a creature on top of a silhouette of a creature on top of a car with the sun setting in the background. It's really nice. Cool looking cover, and that's kind of what dragged me into this movie. But I was really hesitant going into this movie because of the hype. Mark Nato's review had me really excited. Just the premise of this movie got me really, really excited, and I kind of hyped myself up going into this movie. And while I was watching it, I was trying my hardest to de-excite myself, if that's even a word, and just not expect it to be a brilliant film. but I don't want to start yelling and screaming about how much I love this film just yet, because I don't want you guys to go into this film with that same thought. I don't want you to go in expecting this to be the best film of all time or anything like that. But holy fuck me, this film blew me away. The film is very enjoyable. It kept me glued to the screen. So through the movie, it flashes back to a previous life, and there was a little bit of that story that kept me there, and I wanted to know her story. And then it went back to the post-apocalyptic side of the more horror side, and that was great. But for some reason, the previous life of how she met this guy and stuff just had me absolutely glued to the screen. It has a warmth and innocence to it that the writer conveys without making it overly complicated, if that makes sense. The cast gave brilliant performances. The role of Juliet, the main character, because this is only, for the most part, it only stars really two people. There are other characters that come in through it, but they're only in it temporarily. And then, of course, you've got the creature who's played by Javier Bardet. Of course. I mean, what doesn't he do? But there were little hints of Juliet's performance. I'm struggling to know what her real name is. That kind of pulled me out just a tad. That is the only nitpick I have with this movie. The rest of the cast gave brilliant performances. The story flows seamlessly between the past and the present. It's an incredible story. I loved it. And it's directed brilliantly by the writer. And this is his first attempt, I believe, at a full feature length film. And bravo. I want to see what you can do next. Now, the creature design in this movie is something I feel we've seen, a humanoid type creature with long limbs. But there was something about this film, the look of the creature, that really bothered me. It creeped me out a lot. I've recently started, you probably heard my review a while ago of Ghost Stories, how I said that it really scared me and freaked me out. This movie had me really tense in some moments, like had me really like scared. But I feel that's because I'm now watching movies on my laptop with my earphones in, so I've got like basically surround sound in my brain, and I'm watching these in the dark, which is really helping the horror come to light in my world. So I don't want to say that this movie is going to scare you, but for me it worked. There were not over all the time, and they weren't jump scares. They were scenes that you just see glimpses of the creature, but it made me really tense, really really tense. This movie doesn't rely on jump scares at all. I don't think there's any jump scares. The gore in this movie, the gore looks incredible. But this isn't a film that relies on gore. There's not much of it, but when it comes, it really delivers. I'll tell you that much. There is one kill in this that had my jaw wide open. I loved it. Man, I couldn't take my eyes off the screen while watching this, and I needed to know what happens next. This film, after when the credits start rolling, this film is the exact reason why I'm a fan of film. It have everything I love in it. And I can proudly say that this now is my number one film for 2018. I loved it from start to finish, and I highly recommend everyone check it out. I'm not going to lie, this does tug on your heartstrings at the end. It did have me crying at the end, I will say that. But I find that a compliment to the movie. If a movie can scare me and then bring me to the tears, the same movie, it's done a fucking good job. I'll tell you that much. This movie, I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. Here's why. For me to give a movie a 10, it has to be a rewatchable film, something that's just perfect in every single way. This film was so close to being perfect. It's just those few little performances by the character of Juliet that brought it down. But I want to rewatch this film so much, but I'm waiting for it to be released on Blu-ray so I can go and buy it, because this is a definite buy for me. When I rewatch it, I'm going to reevaluate my score. I can see this going up to a 9.5 to a 10. I loved this film, and I highly, highly suggest you all, if you get a chance to go view this film, do it. Do it now. It's Hostile from 2018. So that's been this episode. Why don't I just add a little bit of a talking session right now on The Nun? I had a quick chance to go see The Nun on the weekend, and everyone's ripping this movie apart. I really don't get it. They're saying it's the worst of the Conjuring series, and yeah, it just doesn't hold up, and it's not scary and all that stuff. My views on the film, and I spoke to Cake Wolf about this. Now, Cake Wolf is a massive fan of Nunsploitation, as he likes to call it, Nun films. He loves that satanic view in films. So this was an easy one for him. He would have loved it straight up. Kind of like how shark films are for me. But look, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's a perfect film and it's as great as The Conjuring and you should rush out and see it. No. But it's not what people are saying. I do not get the hate for this film. Some of the visuals in this movie are incredible. There is a scene where a guy is frolicking through, well, not frolicking, but walking through a graveyard, and just the lighting and the fog just really, and the color of the lighting, which was like a nice purple, kind of like Undertaker's purple, really brought out the horror / Halloween feel of this movie. This movie, they're saying it's the darkest chapter of the Conjuring universe. And I feel they're saying that because it's got a very gothic feel to it. A lot of people have said it reminds them of the old horror, Hammer horror films. And I tend to agree with them. A lot of the old Dracula films, just the castle that they go into. It's not a great film. It's not going to blow your mind, but it's a decent film and it's worth a watch. Would I see it again? This is a thing. I feel if it came on Netflix, I would give it another go. Now, in my rankings of the Conjuring universe, I was never big into Annabelle. I don't get the love. I don't get the love of Annabelle. She's just a fucking doll. I know she's got a spirit attached to her and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. But I'm not on board with the whole Annabelle series. So I would probably put this, The Nun, after the Conjuring films. So, of course, the Conjuring films are the best in the series. Then The Nun, then the Annabelle movies. Of course, the first Annabelle is my most disliked out of the series. But this is worth a watch. I would give it a 7 out of 10. And I think that you should give it a watch. So that was it for our reviews on this episode. Now, it's the time of that night where we finally get into what everyone's been waiting for. Possibly, maybe. We'll see. What's pumping on your iPod? What's pumping on your iPod? So, do you remember this guy? Through the storms, through the cries. The sexy sax man from the movie The Lost Boys, which is easily one of the best parts of that movie, who sings that awesome song, I Still Believe, which to this day is one of my all-time favourite songs. And yes, I'm sorry for playing that clip a bit too long. I just can't stop it when it starts playing. So if you remember him, you remember his signature ponytail with his muscles all oiled up and the saxophone that he plays so perfectly. Well, he's released a solo album that was released, I think, July. I think it was around July. Anyway, if you remember this song, well, this is him now. Kill it! Kill it! Burn it with fire! Yeah, so I'm not even fucking kidding you. That's called Sax, and in brackets, Interlude, apart from his song, apart from his CD. Yeah, so me and Ben both had the honour of getting this album and having a listen through it. And you can probably tell by my reactions that I'm not a fan of this album. I kind of found it very cringeworthy, especially the cover. The cover of the album is like a red and yellow kind of swirly thing with him in the front doing a cool pose, holding his muscles in very, very tight latex, which it's really cool. That's the only part really I dig. But let's get to the actual album. And when it was released that this guy was bringing out a solo album, I was excited because I wanted to hear his solo stuff, like stuff that he's written and stuff like that. But I'm pretty sure, now don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure every single song on this album is a cover. So you have I Put a Spell on You, you have Nutbush, Little Bitty Pretty One. These are songs that you may not know by title, but you'd know if you heard them. They're all covers. And I don't want to sound like a dick or anything like that, but they're not good. They're really not good. I'll give you an example. His Nutbush version isn't the singing. It's just him just going, Nutbush City Limits! And that's just the whole song. Repeated for about 3 minutes. It's kind of cringeworthy, and to be honest with you, the first time listening to this, I was laughing because it was pretty bad, but it got to a point where I had to turn it off. I could not take any more saxophone anymore, and I thought it would be like that. I thought going in that I would pick up this album and be like, I'm going to hear a lot of saxophone, and I'm probably going to get sick of it. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't realize that I'd be as sick of it as I am now. I thought it would be half decent. But yeah, look, this album is not good. And look, there is an audience out there because Alan himself, the Mr. Cha-Cha himself, he enjoyed this album. He gave me a review. I actually asked him if he could give a few words. I smashed my phone, so I've got a new phone, so I kind of lost it. Sorry, Alan. But I remember him saying that he was a fan of this, and he'd give it a check it out on YouTube as a rating. I can't give him that. I'm sorry, man. This is a throw it the fuck away. If I got given this as a gift, I would think that the person who gave this to me was having a joke, quite honestly. Or maybe they gave it to me because they know I'm a fan of the Lost Boys. And then I'd probably have to smile like I really appreciate it when deep down I'm thinking, oh, fuck, not again. This, yeah, I could not get into this album at all. And I know me and Ben had a talk about this when I saw him. And he was the exact same. He couldn't get into this at all. So, yeah, it's it's one for an acquired taste. I will say that much. But now it gets to the struggle of what song to play for y'all. And there's a little bit of me that wants to play something completely different. That's not Tim Capello. But then there's the other side that's like, no, well, you're reviewing the album. There are people out there who might like this, so you have to play something off this album. So I'm going to have to go with that. Oh, I must add also that he does the song I Still Believe on this album. But he's redone it, and even that's not good. The saxophone sounds like it's not even the same note as the rest of the band. It just sounds really off, and yeah, I could not get into even that song, and I love that song.
Oh my god, I cannot think of what song I want to play for you, because I want to show you what the album's like, but I don't want your ears to hurt afterwards. I'm going to play the song, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to play Tequila for you. You'll know that song when it comes on, and I'm sorry, it gets repetitive. If you don't like it, just turn it off. I won't put anything after the song. This will be it. So that is it for this episode, episode 51. I thank you all for joining us this week, or joining me this week. Look, I don't know what's happening with Ben, if he's going to come back. I don't know if we're going to continue the Friday the 13th episodes, unfortunately. Maybe I'll just do it by myself. Maybe, if that's what you guys would be interested in, hearing just my thoughts on Friday the 13th, let me know. You can do that at Horror for Dummies on the Facebook, there's only one Facebook, or you can hit us up at horrorfordummies@hotmail.com. Let me know what would you like to do. If you want me to do another Mixtape Madness episode, I can do that. If you want another one of these episodes, kind of small reviews all over the place episode, let me know. Hit me up. You know where to do that. I thank you for that. And this has been us. Horror for Dummies is now out. And we play Tim Capello's... Sorry, guys. Tim Capello with Tequila. Dip! No, sorry. Actually, no. There's no dip right now. I did it again. I fucked up. I completely forgot to tell you what album we're doing next week. So the album we're doing next week, and this is one that I've been dying to do for weeks, is the band Hailstorm with the album Vicious. New album just released, and we'll be covering that next week. Okay, now we're out. Dip!